Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Viken Berberian. He's the author, most recently, of a novel, Das Kapital, a novel of love and money markets. He is the author, as well, of The Cyclist. Both books have been published by Simon & Schuster. Now, one of the things that I notice, what's so peculiar about this book is, while I'm tempted to call it a satirical novel, it doesn't quite state the case. How do you see its tone?
I think it's a serious book, but I also see it as a satirical book, a satire of ideologies and the people who live within these ideologies, whether these ideologies, they cover all the isms, hypercapitalism, Marxism, situationism. So I do try to have fun and make fun at some of the people who inhabit these ideologies and are completely confined by them. And so in some ways, it is satirical, but I think I also read it as a serious story about many other things. The main character is a stock trader, Wayne, who has this very Cartesian, scientific, mechanical almost view of the world and the way things work. And his transformation, so to speak, into someone who's more sensible, more human, if you will, thanks to this woman, a French woman who he meets, and through her, he's able to hopefully make the leap and embrace this abstract idea of love, which cannot be proved or disproved empirically. And for him, this is a very strange thing. So to me, that's not a very satirical thing. It's a very serious thing to fall in love. It's almost catastrophic somewhat.
Yes. And in fact, both his sense of disaster, his way of dealing in stock, he's an analyst at a hedge fund, he's a trader, and he believes that by selling short in anticipation of or immediate response to the world's catastrophes, he will be very successful. He has a company called Empiricus Capital.
Yes.
And his well-being depends upon the end of the world, or the projection that the world has nothing to do but to end. And so at the end of this book, he's in love at the end of the world. Both are true. The end of the world arrives and the end of love, but they are both there, neck and neck, in a sense.
It's true. Wayne is very much attuned to the downside, and I'm not sure if we should talk about the ending of the book, but there is this collapse that takes place with Wayne and Alix on the rooftop of the building, and I won't give away the ending, but that is very much a commentary on his transformation from this very mechanical person who's not very attuned to his senses into someone who's fallen in love. But just at the time that he does fall in love, everything just collapses, and So in a sense, there is no affirmation of anything, perhaps, not only the isms, not only the ideologies, but of love itself as well, possibly. I hope that's not the case, because it's something I believe in.
You believe in love?
I hope everyone does.
This is an art opening in the book Das Kapital by my guest Viken Berberian. The two people who are at the opening are the French woman, Alex, and Wayne, the short seller. They are at a gallery in New York.
The next day, Alix and Wayne met at Tony Fair on West 22nd. He tried to make sense of the ominous title of the retrospective. It was called Holes and Boundaries, The Dictatorship of the Viewer. He had no idea what it meant, but owing to the postmodern theme, he was confident that many New Age philosophers would attend. While browsing a promotional brochure, Alix came across the name of one of the organizers, Dr. Félix Maudin, a self-described paradisciplinary French relativist moral philosopher, professor, architect, sculptor, writer, painter, and documentary filmmaker. Maudin arrived at the opening with a swarthy boy from Bangalore. There was little reason in what the boy wore: a rainbow-colored fez, a white Indian shirt, spandex tights, and fluorescent Nikes. The boy looked traumatized, as if he had just converted to postmodernism. Maudin himself was dressed in ghetto fabulous. He carried a translucent neoprene briefcase with nothing inside. They took their time touring the gallery. They said bonjour to everybody. "Darling, please, I've seen better art hanging in the Lufthansa guest lounge," Maudin concluded. His was a perspective informed by a creative household. At an early age, he dressed up his toothbrush in little skirts he made. Alix surveyed the septic walls of the gallery. What the critics called art were random squiggles and lines masked as ironic detachment. She looked at one of the installations, a series of windows and viewing cones that captured disassembled plants, broken at the bract, mangled. There was the smell of chlorophyll in the air. She had seen many of these plants on sale at Marseille. They were everywhere. She had one in her studio. It sat on a sill, comfortably constant. She peered into one of the viewing cones. What had these plants done to deserve such a fate? "As viewers, you're all oppressors," Maudin suddenly proclaimed to the crowd. "You inject your personal history into everything you look at, not unlike a dictator who imposes his individual history onto society." His voice was high-pitched, mocking. When Alix finally approached Maudin, the postmodern groupies had formed a tight knot around him. They followed his words, swelling above the crowd like some kind of coded incantation. He talked about a bombing, or the art of bombing, or the bombing of art. It was difficult to tell what the postmodernists ever talked about. "Darling, there's nada, nothing. It's the end of Western hegemony, if not of dialectical history," he declared. "Forgive me for poo-pooing your American administration, but I must take them to task for their appropriations, maneuvers, techniques, and functionings, all of which, of course, should be examined in a network of relations, constantly in tension, in activity." "I think we should go," Wayne said. "I can't take any more of this bull. Plus, there's no price list."
Viken Berberian, reading from Das Kapital. Now, the suggestion then is that against such a culture in which the art of bombing and the bombing of art are interchangeable, there are three things. There's acting in the market, there's love, and there's terrorism. And the three characters in this book, who form a kind of triangle, represent those poles. And yet they are intertwined, because it is the terrorist who introduces Alix, the French woman who lives in Marseille, to Wayne, the hedge fund manager who lives in Manhattan. Wayne has discovered that he can help his theory along. Not only can he do well in the market from catastrophe, he can provoke catastrophe by hiring terrorists. The terrorists, in turn, are getting funds from the vast profit of the people who work for, what's the name of the company?
Empiricus Capital.
Yes. And so these things, it really is a novel of love and money markets, and they go hand in hand. Now, this is a satirical projection, or do you perceive it to be, in fact, part of the spiraling progression that we're living in?
I think we live in a time of catastrophe. I don't think that's something specific necessarily to how we live today. I think we've always had catastrophes in history, in modern history, in ancient human history. I think what's different this time is how catastrophe is projected, and by that I mean it's taken the form of spectacle almost, and it's very much image-based, and that's very much a reflection of technology and the fact that we spend so much time watching television and our screens, whether it's computer screens, our financial computer screens, or TV sets at home, or movie theater. So when the Corsican and Wayne target these landmark design buildings across the globe in different countries, it's at the forefront of this is the idea of spectacle, of targeting something that would is image based, which of course removes this act of political or economic violence away from its objectives, and the act turns into a spectacle itself, and it turns onto itself, and it becomes a celebration of the image itself. So I sort of play with that idea. The book is also about these giving meaning to the improbable and being prepared for the improbable, whether that improbable is a catastrophic thing like the collapse of the World Trade Center, which was a horrific event, or falling in love. And some people describe these improbable events as black swans because most swans tend to be white, but black swans do happen in life, in real life. 9/11 was a black swan. And Wayne, he bets on these black swans, which is another way of saying that. He bets on volatility. He bets on catastrophe. He bets on the next disaster. But can he bet on love? And is there room in his worldview to embrace love, this improbable thing of falling in love?
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking to Vikan Berberian, author most recently of Das Kapital, a novel of love and money markets, published by Simon & Schuster. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Vikin Barbarian about his novel Das Kapital. Well, you have a quote. I even wondered if you made it up. It's a quote from Albert Einstein in which he says, gravitation is not responsible for people falling in love. And yet, again, one of the things that the book puts into play is love fated? Are calamities fated? Is the anomaly an inevitability? Or could it be that, like gravity, it's one of the rules of the universe? Einstein is here accepting love from universal rule, gravity, and the book begins to ask, have people like Wayne and his traders made themselves so counterintuitive that they're impervious to the beckonings of tender instinct while remaining luridly sensitive to the possibilities of apocalypse?
Yes, and I think Einstein is also saying that perhaps most of the universe is mathematical and can be explained through physical laws, but in this instance, you know, gravity can't explain why, physics cannot explain why people fall in love. So some things we can explain mathematically, scientifically, numerically, but there are other aspects of the human condition and which reflect, impinge directly on our emotions and senses and feelings that we cannot show, prove, or disprove scientifically, physically. And love is one such exception. Of course, there's also a cycle of sorts with that quotation that I use, and it sort of ties into the ending. If you notice the narrative of the book with the two protagonists on the rooftop of the building and the falling, the collapse of the building and them falling.
Now, one of the figures whose way of reading the world occurs is brought into the novel by the Corsican, the terrorist figure, and that's Guy Debord, the author of The Society of the Spectacle. And I wondered if you could talk about his presence here in this novel.
Well, he's very much a presence in that the Corsican is very much informed by the Situationist movement. Of course, the key, one of the founding fathers of that movement is Guy Debord, and his seminal work is The Society of the Spectacle, in which the one of the central tenets is that we do live in an image-based society, and that images are very much part of our everyday lives. Of course, the Situationists come, it's both a political and was a political and cultural movement that dates back to 58 and sort of took off in the 1960s. And I think it's very much the movement, it was a critique of the existing cultural, political, economic sort of paradigms that we lived in. And it consisted of, it was a loose confederation of political activists, cultural activists. But so the Corsican is very much informed by the Situationist movement, but he's also an environmentalist. He's someone who wants to return back to the state of nature, and it's his way of rejecting this image-based culture that we live in, and that's what Corsica refers to. That's how he interprets the island of Corsica, which is, of course, geographically completely separated from the rest of France. And the Corsicans actually are very interesting in that although they're part of France, they refer to the French and the rest of Europe as the continent. So anyone who comes from France to the island, they refer to as the Continentals. So there is this seclusion, this idea of seclusion and this idea of preserving the island in all its natural beauty, in all of its opposition to modernity and to globalization. And so the Corsican is very much a product of this island. That's why I refer to him as the Corsican, because I wanted this sense of place, the island, to supersede his other character traits. Each time I refer to him as the Corsican, I want to go back to this isolated state of nature, this island.
And the isolation of an island itself.
Yes.
Yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. It's my impression that though the Situationists located and deplored the society of spectacle, they were also poet, filmmaker, playful enough to say that perhaps what we need to do is to invent a counter-spectacle, to invent our own form of anomaly. We must escape the dailiness of daily life. To some, this has led to the idea of whimsy, and there's the criticism of the events of May 68 that they created a global whimsy that was incapable of sustaining itself in a world that became taken over by market capitalism, by global market capitalism, a whole succession of empiricisms that leave out the playful. And yet, in this novel, it occurred to me that for the Corsican, his form of playfulness is terrorism.
Yes, but in some ways, I think that's true. There's this section where he's exchanging notes with his lieutenant Figolu, and they're deciding what building to target next, and they go down a list of these landmark buildings, institutions in different cities in the world, and at the same time, he's cooking an omelet, and his assistant, the lieutenant Figolu, says, "I've always wanted to be an architect." Meanwhile, they're discussing the destruction of these buildings, and the Corsican responds by saying, "But you are an architect. You're an architect of death," and he invites Figolu to have the omelet with him, and so I do juxtapose terror with this very kind of uncomfortable satire. I've always, in the backdrop, I always had the idea that there's this prevailing spectacle always in the way we live, in the way we look at things, and that's what informs and runs through the Corsican as well. When he talks about destroying a building, it's the idea of creating the next spectacle, the yes. next 9/11.
It seems systematic, as it, or a spiral that depends upon an ideology growing out of a spectacle, and then the market following the ideology. It seems as if, you know, what gets launched in this novel is a cycle of ideas that needs to be escaped from and
exactly.
can be escaped
how do we
from.
Escape? How do we escape? How do we escape this image-based society? That's I'm not sure how we do it, but even the title itself, I think I used it in part. I mean, it's It's obviously the seminal work of Karl Marx, but in using it, I was using it as title as spectacle,
mm-hmm.
that it can be used. It can be used for a novel. And in the end, how do we interpret it? Do we interpret a spectacle? The title itself, this seminal work, as you said, has turned into
an appropriatable product,
image.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Then, if that is so, doesn't it become necessarily embraced naivete to say that somehow the solution has to do with the counterintuitive in the form of love? It seems to me that this is either embraced naivete or desperate measure.
But what else can we embrace? What else can we turn to? It's, love is not an ideology, but it's something I think we should believe in as in opposition to this image-based culture of society, globalized economy that we live in, that I'm very much a part of as well, and whose rules I very much respect, but it's not always a very honorable way of existing and of living. And so if there is truth, I think we need to find it in very physical things, which love is. It's not just this abstract notion. It's living with people. It's living with others. So I don't think it's a form of escapism. I think it's very difficult to achieve, if anything. It escapes many people.
I've been speaking with Vigen Berberian, author most recently of Das Kapital, a novel of love and money markets, published by Simon & Schuster. Thank you, Vigen, for joining me.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Michael.
You can read a section from Das Kapital at kcrw.com/bookworm. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.